Welcome to Tough Talk with Mike Sawyer and Oliver Kopp.
You guys rock!
Woo! MMA Radio, the way you like it. This is Tough Talk.
Welcome back to Tough Talk. Today we'll be previewing the big UFC show on the Versus Network. We're going to talk a little James Toney and our thoughts on our potential fight between Rich Franklin and Randy the Natural Couture. And speaking of Couture, we're going to be joined in the program by the lovely Kim Couture, who has a fight coming up on the 27th. I'm Mike Sawyer, and on the line with me is my co-host Oliver Kopp. Oliver, how you feeling, buddy?
All good, brother. All good, gotten back on the horseback in Germany and ready to go to UFC 111.
Oh, man, you're gonna have a good time with that.
For sure. How about you? What's going on in Vegas?
I'm doing good. First thing I want to know is, how are you feeling?
Actually, if I feel fine, Mike, and thing is, maybe I should explain a little bit. When I went down to Bangkok, I actually just wanted to transit there and go to Australia a couple of days later, but when I got there, I got diagnosed with a case of deep vein thrombosis. And the thing about thromboses is you don't really feel them. You feel fine. The only thing is, once you're afflicted, you're one or two steps away from getting a pulmonary embolism or a heart attack or a stroke or something. So I was very lucky they caught it in time. I've been on medication ever since and pretty much in a perpetual daze. So forgive me for sounding even less coherent than I normally do. but everything's good. Everything's good. And I'm looking forward to getting out again and to going to UFC 111.
Oh, that's going to be a good trip for you, man. When are you leaving for that?
I'm actually just going there on Friday, so it's going to be Friday to Sunday trip. But again, it's just the East Coast, so it's only eight and a half hours from Germany, so that's not so bad. Plus, it's a nonstop flight, which also helps.
Good. I'm glad you're feeling better. We were nervous at the website.
Brother, I got to tell you, it was a close call. 24 hours. If I had discovered it 24 hours later, I may not be sitting here now.
What was the symptoms?
Basically, you just realize it by watching for swellings. You know, your whatever limb is affected gets red and swells up, and it doesn't really feel bad. It just looks out of place. And since I'm pretty psychotic about travel related injuries, I pretty much guessed it had to be some sort of thrombosis and went straight to the hospital. So that was pretty much a blessing in disguise. I did really hate not to be able to go down to Australia, because it was a major, major event. And just George's fight against Joe Daddy, that's something I would have probably never forgotten had I been there. But again, you win some, you lose some, and with the amount of travel I do, I'm actually pretty lucky. This is the first time it's hit me in 15 years now, so knock on wood, brother.
We're just good. We're just happy that you're okay. You probably dropped a few pounds as well.
I wouldn't go there. Probably wouldn't.
Okay, it's a stretch.
The thing is, again, Mike, you feel normal. You're not in pain. You have no symptoms whatsoever except for the swelling. So you feel like you could take on the world, but the doctors tell you not to move, not to do anything, not to get stressed. So it pretty much, let's say, it sucks. The good thing is I made it through five seasons of The Shield during those 2 weeks, and well, if there's something positive out of it, that's it.
Yeah, and you're talking to us right now, so that is very, very good. We're glad you're feeling better.
Although, brother, to be honest, a corpse probably would give better predictions to the fights. So,
yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Well, we're glad that you're doing good. I've been quite busy myself.
So tell me about Joe Knuckles.
Yeah. My uncle and I started up our own MMA fight gear clothing line. Anybody can visit it at joeknuckles.com. The website is still under construction, so it's not. We got one shirt up right now. And right now we got our first fighter. We signed Anthony Njikwani,
really?
Friend of the show.
Really?
Yeah, friend of the show. He's going to be fighting on the WEC show April 24th on the first pay-per-view against Shane Roller. And we're going to have a couple we're going to be sponsoring the Tough Enough fights next Friday, and also have a couple of the fighters we're going to be sponsoring, a couple young kids on the show. So it's something different, something new. It'll go along with the health food store, get a little clothing line in there. Anybody interested?
So what gave you the idea of starting up your own clothing line? I mean, it's not like there's not a million others out there already. What really gave you the idea of going into that market and maybe revolutionizing it?
You know what? It was all my uncle. My uncle was the one that it was his idea. It's his design. And he brought me aboard. I'll be the director of marketing and sales. And we're starting off pretty good. And like I said, we got Anthony Anjikwani, a couple of Tough Enough kids, going to be sponsoring the fights. So go to joeknuckles.com, check it out, and it should be pretty good.
That's very cool. It's a good design, yeah. By the way.
Oh, thank you.
Very fun, very fun. Only thing I'm missing is the John Cena rings on the fingers.
It's got that biker look to it.
Yeah, it does.
It really does. It's got that. I sold a couple of the shirts in the health food store. A couple of bikers came in and loved it, and they bought it. So cool. We were really really happy with that. And speaking of being happy, we're very, very happy to be home back here at the F4W Online, to say the least.
Yeah, well, you got to be honest there. We left for 2 months. It didn't turn out great. Let's just leave it at that.
Yeah, we could. I will say this much. I'm not going to have anything negative to say. Jonathan Snowden, who was a part of that, and he really pulled for us and tried. And I know he takes a lot of abuse on the board, on the message board here at the website, with good reason. A lot of the stuff he's got on there is ridiculous. But if you get a chance to meet Jonathan, he's a very nice guy. And we went to – I think we had lunch with him the one time. And Jeremy Botter, also a lead writer over there at that website, really pulled for us and wanted us to stick around. And a very, very good guy. I talked to him yesterday, and he's going to be coming out to Las Vegas. So I got nothing bad to say. I mean, as far as the guy who runs it, that portion of the website, I should say, I got nothing much to say. I mean, I understand he's a local. He moved here to Vegas recently, I believe, in the last month. And I got nothing bad to say. I mean, what I'm sure I'm going to run into him at an event, maybe the Tough Enough or one of the shows here in Vegas, and I'll just tell him to his face what I think of him, and we will leave it at that.
That's the best you can do.
Yes, exactly.
But again, so what else is new? You can't really say that there aren't any hard feelings or anything on either side.
No.
After 8 to 10 weeks, you really realize if something's gonna work out or not work out. And I think we agreed unanimously this time around that it wasn't working out. And since Dave and Brian left the door open, that's something we jumped at it really immediately.
Yeah, Dave and Brian were cool enough, and I mean, we're always in contact with them. Let's just say we're very happy to be back on the website, and look forward to doing many shows here.
That sounds perfect. And all of a sudden, 6 hours to get a show up doesn't sound that bad, does it?
No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't. You start to appreciate things, my friend. Well, I don't want to interrupt anything here, Oliver, but I'm getting a phone call. I believe our guest is on the line. Let's get to Kim Couture.
This is Tough Talk.
Our guest is one of the most talked about and popular female fighters in the world today. Please welcome to Tough Talk, Kim Couture. Kim, thanks for coming on the show. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Now, I understand 27th in Mexico. Is it for, and who are you fighting?
The promotion is called Playboy Promotions. And the girl's name, if I get it right, I mean, it's much longer. I'll shorten it up a bit. It's Fernanda Lopez. And there's like three other names in the middle of that, but I can't remember them all.
Oh, geez. Now, what do you know about her? Anything?
She was a boxer, so she's new to MMA, but that's all I know. I didn't find any footage on her or anything, so.
Oh, great.
Kind of going to it blind, but that's okay.
Now, is this going to be streamed live over the internet or anything?
It is, and I've asked for that information. I haven't received it yet, and it's going to be on, I don't know how to say it, Telemundo or something like that in Mexico, and I guess there's some people in the U.S. that get that channel.
Okay, we'll have to find it and put the link up for sure.
As soon as they send me that information, I'll forward it.
Okay, cool. That sounds good. You're a tap out here in Vegas now. Who's been helping you out in your training for this fight?
You know, this camp's been completely different from any of the other camps because I actually have girls in my camp. I have two pro boxers, Jessica Ricozzi and Michelle Gutierrez. And I have about six girls total that I've been working with. We've actually been sparring over at Vanderlei's, and then I am at Tap Out most of the time. I work with Master Chan, that's my Muay Thai coach, and I've been working with Cui Gonzalez.
Okay.
He's very well-rounded and was one of my instructors at Extreme Couture. He's a pro fighter as well.
Oh, nice, nice.
Now, what did you do before you became involved in the MMA business?
I was an executive for Steve Wynn at the casinos, so the executive casino host. And I worked at the casinos for about 8 years.
So, and how did you basically get into it via Randy, or was your interest peaked before that?
Yeah, I was training and going to John Lewis's gym called JSAC here in town before I ever met Randy. But I was really new. I had just gotten started and was going through their strength and conditioning workouts just so I could get through a boxing workout. That's how new I was. So pretty basic. And then when I met Randy and then we decided to open up the gym, I was around it all the time. So just in there every day being a sponge.
So how long have you been training now? For how many years?
Going on 6 years.
Wow.
I wasn't training to fight seriously until the last 2 years. Most of it was just for cardio, just for fun.
Now, if you may take us back to your debut fight against Kim Rose, what was going on in your mind and how did you feel going into the fight?
I felt good. I was a little worn out because I was a promoter on that show as well. So I was working long hours trying to put the show together. Everything went together smoothly. It was boxing and MMA. But I just realized through that fight that I need more rest. You know, most important thing going into those fights is just rest your mind, rest your body. And, you know, I felt good. I was ready to go. She caught me with that first punch, and that changed the dynamics of the whole fight.
Yeah, you showed tremendous heart in that fight. As you mentioned, you got hit with the first punch, I think that broke your jaw in half.
It was after a jab, and she came over the top with an overhand right.
How were you able to stay so strong after that initial shot?
Just your adrenaline's pumping. You know, I was pretty focused. You know, I dropped to the ground. It was almost like a little flash knockout. As soon as my knees hit the ground, I woke back up and grabbed her and took her down. Once you start going, you know, she didn't feel strong or heavy or anything, but she broke it in half in the center and then up by my right ear. So I went deaf in my right ear. My equilibrium was off, so everything kind of turned sideways on me. I knew that if I just got to the clinch and was able to take her down, that I'd have a better chance of winning than if I tried to stand with her.
Yeah, I mean, she hit you with that first shot, and within like a second or two, you were right on top. You were almost in side control with her.
Yep.
So
yeah, I was doing better on the ground, but standing up when we started out the second round, when she'd come at me, my equilibrium was so sideways that I couldn't focus. I didn't know if she was coming or going. It looked like this big blob coming at me. So I just wanted to get to the clinch and get back to the ground.
So your jaw is broken. You're deaf in the one ear. What was that first round? What was the corner like after the first round with you?
You know, they never told me my jaw was broken. Obviously, they knew. They could see it. I actually thought I lost some teeth. I went back and I told Randy, you know, I think I lost a tooth. And he goes, nope, they're all there. And I said, I might have lost like three or four because there was a big hole. Every time I pushed my tongue through the middle of where my front teeth are supposed to be, there was just a big gap, and it was sitting in two different pieces, so I pushed it completely open. I'm like, oh my gosh, my teeth are gone. But they never told me my jaw was broke. He just asked me, are you okay, and do you feel strong enough to continue? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. I can win this fight.
Yeah, I mean, that was what was the overall damage you suffered total in that fight?
Just a broken jaw in two places.
Okay.
After that fight, you went on to Strikeforce and beat your first opponent there. Could you please tell us a little bit about that fight?
Yeah, that was a disappointment to me. You know, I knew nothing about that girl. Again, you know, when they're new in the sport, it's hard to find footage on them. I heard she was training with Matt Lindland up at Team Quest, so I was just training like it was the Olympics. I mean, I thought I was prepared for everything, grappling a lot and just in the best shape, and disappointed in there. She really didn't want to fight. It seemed like once she got hit with that first shot, she was turning her head and trying to get away and just really didn't give me anything back. So, you know, that ended in, I think, like a minute and 20 seconds.
Now, somebody who really did want to fight was Cary Vera. What was your impression of Cary Vera as a fighter from the fight you guys had, and what did you learn from the fight?
oh, that was a great fight. You know, I've been friends with Carrie for about 5 years, and, you know, I knew they were putting me in over my head. She has 9 years more experience than me and was a pro boxer, but I knew they were playing on the marketing of Randy and Brandon fighting the weekend before us. So I'm not one to turn a fight down. I took it and just figured that I'd rise to the occasion and, you know, be prepared as best as I could and really believed that I could pull it off, especially if I got her to the ground. You know, the game plan could have been a little tighter, but I got her to the cage, which is what I wanted to do. And once I got her there, you know, that's kind of my bread and butter, just like Randy. I mean, he's the one that taught me everything. I have 10 different ways to get her down from there, but I got tunnel vision. And I tried for that first takedown attempt and didn't get it. Just kept going for that same takedown. There were 10 others I could have done from there. So I think that's just experience. She caught me with a knee to the eye, and that pretty much changed the dynamics of the fight because it felt like a sledgehammer to my face. That actually felt worse than breaking my jaw.
Wow.
Oh, jeez. So tell us a little bit more about yourself. How long have you been in Vegas?
10 years.
Oh, wow. Same as me. 10 good years in Las Vegas. Other than training, what else do you like to do for fun?
I golf a lot, and I like to take my mountain bikes, or I'll take the dogs out to Red Rock. I have a chopper, so I take my bike out riding whenever the weather's permitting. And I ride horses as well, so I go, a good friend of mine has an arena close by to my house, so I go and ride horses and rope.
Oh, wow. Well, it sounds like you're very, very happy at this point.
Yeah, I'm staying busy. I wish there was more hours in the day.
If you look back to Gina Carano and her career in MMA so far, a lot of people say she's been the picture girl for women's MMA in this sport. Do you know what she's been up to lately, and when was the last time you guys talked?
I talked to her around my birthday in December, and she was home for the holidays, but she's actually working on a big movie, and she's been all over Europe. I know she was doing some shooting in Ireland. I heard she was down in New Mexico. This movie's kind of taken her all over the world, and it's a really big role for her, so I'm really excited and can't wait for the movie to come out.
What did you think of the cyborg fight?
I didn't think like Gina looked herself. I know her strengths. I know how tough she is. I do believe that she has the technique and skill to beat Cyborg. It was going to be, you know, showed up 100% that night, and Cyborg definitely looked 100%. And I think Gina just kind of got worn out from the media and the traveling. I mean, they had her traveling all over to do press releases and media and PR all over, and she just kind of worn out and just really didn't... almost gave Cyborg too much respect, really didn't turn it on from the get-go.
Now, let me ask you something more. If you were Gina and had her sort of endorsements and her sort of commercial opportunities, maybe starring in television shows or movies, would you risk going back to the cage? Would you risk your looks? Would you try to make a career in this sport? Or would you rather try to parlay it into a movie career if you were in her shoes?
I think you could do both. I think you could do both. I think she is going to do both. She'll be back to fight. You know? Be all you can be. I mean, if you can, you know, Randy's doing it. He's doing both. And she's never really taken any damage in a fight. Even in the Cyborg fight, she came out. She didn't have a scratch on her. So there's no reason why you can't do both. They kind of go hand in hand because the training is going to keep you in the kind of shape that they want you for in the movies anyway. So, yeah, more power to her. I think she's doing a great job.
Now, obviously, you and Gina are good friends. You guys have trained together at Extreme Couture probably plenty of times. I saw some footage up on YouTube. Let me ask you this, for fun. If Scott Coker calls you today and he offers you $250,000 to fight Gina, would you take the fight?
Well, we're in different weight classes, so...
Yes.
We'd have to do a catch weight or something, and I don't think that I would. I think she's probably the only person that I wouldn't fight just because... You know, we're so close. I mean, I have plenty of other friends in the sport that I think we could put it aside and really go out there and bang it out. But, you know, I have so much respect for her because she's the one that inspired me and taught me, got me going from the get-go when I knew nothing. I think it, I don't know. I think there's just some kind of barrier there that I wouldn't want to cross.
How long did you train with her?
It wasn't consistent. It was off and on when she was in camp, because when she's not in camp, they keep her so busy.
Right.
So I'd say that first, you know, couple years off and on, sporadically.
Nice. Now I heard some rumors that you're starting your own clothing line. Is this true?
Yeah, I'm working on actually a whole team concept. Like I said, I have these six girls in this camp, and a lot of them can't get spots. Fights, or they have people putting them in fights that they're over their head. You know, I have two pro boxers that their first, you know, MMA fights, they're putting them in there with jujitsu black belts, and, you know, then they lost the first couple matches, but they're really talented girls. They just need to be put in the right fights, you know. I need to practice what I preach, because I took that fight with Carrie and I was in over my head, but it was such a great experience. But we're all going to just kind of stick together. We need to stay together for sparring partners. It's been so much better and nicer sparring with the girls. And we're all kind of the same size than with the guys. I mean, I love to do both. I love working with the guys as well. But you pick up some bad habits because you're kind of in survival mode with the guys a little bit more. They're usually 40 pounds heavier than me. So
right.
You're fighting to keep the weight off of you. When, you know, when you go with girls your own size, you can kind of let go and get some confidence here and there. So starting a team concept and then starting a clothing line and working on possibly an equipment line as well.
Oh, very. You'll have to keep us updated with that.
Yeah, we got a lot of things brewing. It's just a little premature to start promoting it yet, but it's all coming together nicely.
Is there anything else you would like to share with us right now that you got going on?
That's it. You know, right now I'm focused on the fight and trying to get through this training camp. I do have a lot of the business stuff going on, but I'm trying to put that aside at least for this last week, and then as soon as I get back from the fight, I have one of the other girls that's fighting in Florida, Michelle Gutierrez. I'll be cornering her the weekend after mine, and then I'll get back and get back to business.
Now, speaking,
I'm trying to set another fight up at the end of May.
Okay. Now, speaking of business, you've been very involved in the gym end of Extreme Couture. Could you please explain to us what your day-to-day responsibilities were and how this differed from what you did for Steve Wynn?
It's kind of the same stuff. You know, I was an executive casino host, so hosting all the VIPs, you're setting up their entire trip. I was in charge of setting up all the credit lines. So setting up their credit line, setting up their flights, setting up their rooms, limos, dinners, shows, their gambling if they need a private table, all of that stuff. If they needed their credit extended, I did all of that. And you'd have, you know, a ton of VIPs. You weren't just helping one person. You'd have a ton of them in for the weekends, especially the big holiday weekends, and it's like the most multitasking job you'll ever face. And it was the same at the gym. You know, I was building the gym, putting the gym together, laying the tiles down in there and decorating it, and then setting up all of the administrative stuff that was involved, and then starting the clothing line. I started an in-house clothing line before we signed a deal with Affliction, so I had made my own shirts and caps and sweatshirts and shorts and all of that good stuff, wraps. And then just hiring the staff and then delegating all the different the duties to different people so that we can get the marketing and PR out there. Somebody was handling the fighters. I managed about 14 guys. And then I did the two promotions as well. And, you know, just answering the phones over there, you get hit with everything. You know, there's a lot of endorsement deals and stuff coming through for Randy, for all the fighters. I set up the websites for all the guys. I have a guy over there, Scott Haney, who is my web designer and graphic designer. Set the guys up with their own LLCs and taught them how to run it as a business, get their tax breaks, and just manage their money better. So there was just so much. I'd sit here all day if I told you everything I did.
Now, a lot of guys we've been talking to who have opened their own gyms said, well, if I could go back, I think there's so many things I could do better. Is there anything you would say you could do better if you went back and had to do it over again?
Oh, so many things. So many things. And, you know, I don't think I would manage fighters again. I mean, it was easy for me because I had the contacts and the knowledge to help them. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't think fighters are that appreciative of stuff that you do for them. So, you know, when I was not traveling with Randy and staying there so they could help all the guys and make their fight shorts and get their banners done and get their sponsors. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm divorced now. And I wish I would have been spending my time more with my husband when I could than on all the people that really didn't appreciate it. So that's probably the first thing I would have done differently. And just not hiring friends or family. You hear that all the time. you know, I've got two people that I brought in that were dear friends of mine from back in Colorado that are the best. I wish I could clone them. And then we hired a lot of family, a lot of friends that it's hard to get them to work.
I hear you.
So we waste a lot of time, a lot of money on people that eventually we either had to replace and then spend more money and train more people. That stuff could have been better. And then I learned a lot with the franchises, kind of tightening that up as well. So I've helped Tap Out now that I've gone to Tap Out and given them, they kind of brought me in as a consultant to help them with their franchise program, learning from the mistakes that I made. There's just so much. There's a lot. I don't want to bore you guys with all that.
It's not boring. It's
not boring.
It's different from what you usually get when you talk to fighters and managers and even trainers, because you have a different perspective on it. Now, if you don't mind,
right.
If you don't mind my asking, I remember you seeming pretty miserable in Belfast when you were over with Randy. And everybody was talking to Randy. You were like sulking in the background a little bit. Did Belfast as a city not appeal to you?
Yeah, you know, I was there for a week, and you do kind of get depressed. It was very rainy and cold, and I was just so tired. And, I wasn't miserable, but I was so excited to see Ireland, and it was kind of, I was kind of upset to have such horrible weather that whole week. I didn't get to do any sightseeing or anything, but the fights were good. I went out there to take Tyson Griffin his fight shorts and his banner and help him out, and then Forrest was on the card as well. The fights are always good, so.
Well, now you know why the grass is so green in Ireland.
But I know. I just felt so tired. I felt so heavy and tired over there. Like, it didn't matter how much sleep I got. I just didn't feel like I could wake up. So it was definitely a different experience.
Listen, a little story there. We flew into Dublin and drove up to Belfast. Right at the border, it started raining. In Dublin, it was sunny all day. We came to Belfast, we came to Northern Ireland, it started to rain and rain and rain for 1 week. And it didn't stop raining until we left Northern Ireland, went back to Dublin. So I totally sympathize with you. It was the most horrible week I've ever had with the UFC. But let's change gears for a bit here. You had this thing going on with Victoria and TNA, or Tara as they called her. What was the deal with that?
They just asked me to make an appearance, and I was going to be in town anyway working with my sponsors, so they invited me over, and, you know, she usually really wants to fight me. She wants to get into MMA, and she just hasn't had a fight yet, so it's a lot different from what she does. I think she was working with Scott Coker to try and get a fight set up, but I know everybody's encouraged her to take an amateur fight or even a fight debut just to get her feet wet. And it just kind of went away. I haven't heard any more about it.
Would you have liked to keep the angle going a little bit longer?
Oh, it didn't matter to me. It didn't matter. You know, I'll fight whoever they put in front of me.
Well, maybe Hulk Hogan will call you and we can put that together. Maybe offer you some good money and get that done.
You know, I'm anxious to get in there with somebody at the same level as me. It's like I either find somebody that's not ready for me, or I find somebody like Kara who's 9 years more experienced. Like, it'd be nice to find somebody that's got the exact same experience.
Yes, yes. You've also done work with the local Tough Enough. I think you did some of the play-by-play or the broadcasting. You enjoy doing that?
I love doing that. It's I commentate. I've done about 9 or 10 shows now, and those guys are fantastic. They're doing a really good job.
No, we're just about to let you go, and we wanted to play a game of word association with you. We give you a name or whatever, and you give us the first thing that comes to mind, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
Mark Coleman.
Gosh, I don't know. I can't think of a word for him.
How about Aaron Tohill?
Aaron Tohill. I don't know who that is.
Okay.
Is it a guy
Showtime.
Or a girl? what's that?
It's the girl.
Okay, yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, it's a girl. Sean Tompkins.
Great coach.
And Dana White.
Passionate.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Kim, and we'd love to have you back on again very soon.
Great. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Kim. Take care. Let me tell you, Mike, they call her Sugar Kim Couture for a reason, because she was really sweet today. Good work on bringing her in, and I got to tell you, I very much appreciated the insight into what she did at Extreme Couture, because I knew she was very busy behind the scenes, but I had no idea, for instance, that she was actually working with the individual fighters to set up stuff for those guys.
Yeah, definitely. We got to thank her for coming on. Big name here in Las Vegas. She's got a lot of fans out here. Again, she's worked with the Tough Enough people. She's got the big fight on the 27th, and I'm going to have to go up to Tap Out and meet her and go up there. And like I say, I'm always going to go, and I never do. This time I'm going to go. I'll find some time and head up there, and we got to really thank her for coming on the show.
See, the thing is, I think Kim should be brought back in the future after a fight. There's a lot of questions, a lot of follow-up questions I have right now about the business side. I think that's something that could be very interesting to people as well. We didn't really get to go deep into the questions about what she did at Extreme Couture or what she's doing right now, because obviously you heard there was noise in the background. She already was on her way to next appointment.
Yes.
So we're going to bring her back eventually, and she's going to be back on the show, and that's going to be good.
Yeah, it was definitely great to have her, and we will definitely be bringing her back.
That is correct. And speaking of bringing somebody back, there's somebody who's going to be brought back to fight on the next show on UFC on Versus 1 just a couple of days from now. And that is Clay the Carpenter Guida. And Mike, I got to tell you, there's not many guys who I can recall who went from being in a semi-main event of a show to being on the undercard all of a sudden.
Let's start with Clay. Which I believe, it's incredible when you think about this, Oliver. Apparently, his stock has dropped so much that, you know, and remember, this isn't a pay-per-view. He isn't making the main card on a free fight night, pretty much, which is even more remarkable. What's your thought on this?
Good question, really. The official side I've been hearing is that Shannon Gugger just isn't a big enough name to where they want to put him in Clay on the main card. But I've also heard other rumors that Clay is being punished for something that hasn't really been explained well, and that's the reason why, despite people dropping out left and right, his fight still stayed on the undercard. I mean, Alessio fucking Sakara and James Irvin got the nod instead of him and Shannon Gugerty.
Oh, Jesus.
And again, Versus is a sports network. Mm-hmm. They have actively said, look, UFC, if this show is going to run long, no problem whatsoever. Take whatever time you want. So chances are pretty good that Clay Guida is going to end up on the card anyway, at least if it's a good fight.
No, he definitely will. And I've said in the past, I mean, this guy could go 0-10, and I'm still having him open any pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Or any show that I'm going to be doing. I don't know what he did. I don't know if he's in the doghouse. Who knows what's going on there.
See, the one thing, sorry if I jump in there, I've been hearing a couple of rumors that James Toney is going to be fighting James Irvin first. And in that regard, it would make sense to have Sakara and him fight on television, because if Irvin beats Sakara spectacularly, a lot of people will have seen it. So that may be the one logical explanation to have James Irvin and Alessio Sakara on the main card and not Clay Guida and Shannon Gugerty.
So you don't think that has anything to do with jealousy over his hairline?
I wouldn't think so.
You don't think that? I mean,
I personally don't buy into the doghouse line, because Clay is a guy who's always taken any fight they've offered him. He's never turned down a fight in his life. So would he get into the doghouse? I mean, if you get into the doghouse by having great spectacular fights, then maybe, but anything else, Clay's great with the press. Clay's great with the fans. There's nothing Clay doesn't do that the company wants.
No, and you know, you mentioned his last couple. I mean, he's coming off that loss to Kenny Florian at UFC 107, and he had that tremendous fight with Diego Sanchez. He is 5-5 in the UFC. He's fought all good guys. I mean, all of the fights are good. Huge crowd favorite. Like you said, we're still going to get a chance to see him at some point on this show, and I expect him to win this fight. You?
I would think so, too. Shannon Gugerty's not a bad fighter by any means.
No.
But I think Clay's got to be motivated for this fight. He didn't look really good against Kenny Florian, so he's got a lot to make up for. His fights before that, with the exception of the Diego fight, weren't very spectacular. He turned into a more methodical fighter against guys like Nate Diaz and Mac Danzik.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something he may want to work on. And I think he's going to be motivated to turn up the heat a couple notches for this one.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, this is a guy who's coming off a loss to Terry Adam at UFC 105. And he's dropped, you know, two of his last three, but he's dangerous on the ground. He's very, very dangerous, and anything can happen in a fight, as we've seen many times in the past few years here. So I'm going to go with Clay Guida, and hopefully we get a chance to see him, and most likely we will. And you mentioned Alessio Sicara and James Irvin. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Huh, I don't know where to start, to be honest. I really do not know where to start, because Sicara is a good boxer. James Irvin has good hands as well. But I don't think I'm ever going to forget how Anderson Silva tooled James Irvin. That is one thing I'm never going to get out of my mind. Alessio Sicara hasn't been a good fighter in the UFC. He's been on a couple of losing ends of a couple of fights. He should have won on paper. So I'm not impressed with Alessio Sicara. I think James Irvin's going to take this one. I think he's going to knock out Sicara in the second.
Okay. I mean, this is an interesting fight. Will the winner of this fight still be significant? I mean, one thing I will say about these two guys, usually something spectacular happens, and it's most likely to them. But either way, I mean, James is coming off, like you mentioned, that beating that Anderson Silva gave him. But there's always something spectacular, whether it's the Terry Martin knee or the Houston Alexander Superman punch. There's always – or him getting destroyed. There's always something going on with him. And Sicara, you know, the same thing. Sicara, I think he got knocked out by Houston Alexander with a knee. There's always something going on with these two. One of them, I think, is going to get knocked out. And, you know, it's not a fight that I really care too much about. I know James Irvin has come on recently and talked about some of the past pain pill addiction that he's had. So congratulations on getting off that, which isn't easy. But, you know, it could turn into something. We could have a spectacular knockout in this fight. I don't care either way, but maybe this could surprise us.
And that gets us to the big three, because two heavyweight fights, one light heavyweight fight, and each of these fights is going to have a tremendous impact on their respective divisions. Let's start out with the Czech Congo and Paul Buentello.
Oof. Now,
that's a fight I've been wanting to see for a long time, Mike, because Czech Congo is probably the best pure striker in UFC's heavyweight division. He's a great kickboxer, but he gets overconfident, and he doesn't really train on the ground. Paul Buentello, on the other hand, is a very, 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 very even guy. He has good hands. He's got okay cardio. He's good on the ground. And the one thing he's really good at is avoiding getting beat. Now, if you look back to the Stefan Struve fight, it was a close call. But what Paul Buentello did was he started to anticipate Stefan Struve's movements during the second round and the third round, and he started actively countering him. Czech Congo is very susceptible to getting outsmarted. So personally, I expect this to be a nice slugfest between the two, and I expect Paul Buentello to come out on top. What do you think?
Damn it. Kiss of death has spoken, and I really want Paul to win this fight. I really like Paul. This is just a good guy who wants to fight, and he's going to give it everything he has. You mentioned that fun fight he had with Stefan Struve at UFC 107. He won his two fights in Affliction, too. I mean, he's going to get everything you have. He was 6-2 since the loss to Arlovski, with wins over Ruben Vial and Carter Williams, and he had that nice knockout on Tank, and I believe he beat our boy Gary Goodrich as well. Congo's coming off the embarrassing loss to Frank Mir and the pretty much the embarrassing loss to Cain Velasquez. Although he took the fight on short notice, he was mauled to death. I hope that this isn't a loser-leave-town fight, so to say, with Paul, because if it is... it's going to be tough, because I think Paul's going to stand with him. I think he's going to really stand with him and slug it out, and it might not work in his favor. I'm going to favor Czech Congo in this fight, but I really would like to see Paul win.
So you're hoping that the kiss of death doesn't work on this one.
Oh, please. Yes, exactly. You better be right on this one, Oliver.
Now, what about Junior Dos Santos and Gabriel Gonzaga?
Oh, listen. Will the real Gabe Gonzaga please stand up? I mean, this is a guy. He looked punishing against Lesnar's boy in that last fight. It's a guy who's destroyed Josh Hendricks. He submitted Justin McCauley. He punted Mirko Krokop in a semi-retirement. But it's also the same guy that gets dropped by a shot from Shane Carwin. I'll never forget the Randy Couture fight. Randy completely took his heart and soul. And Verdum took his teeth. So, I mean, but this is a guy who's 6'4", 6'5", 250. He is a monster. I would never count Gabe Gonzaga out of a fight. The longer it goes, I think it doesn't favor him. I think he loses confidence. Maybe not the smartest in the world. But I would hate to fight Gabriel Gonzaga. And this is a fight that if he won, it really, really wouldn't surprise me. I mean, Junior Dos Santos is 10-1. He's 4-0 in the UFC. He's looked absolutely fantastic. He's destroyed Gilbert Ivel. He beat up Krokop. He killed Stefan Struve. And he uppercutted Verdum all the way to Strikeforce. So, I mean, the guy has been a monster. Again, I'm leaning towards Junior Dos Santos. He's looked tremendous. I never count Gabe Gonzaga out of a fight, though. I'm really looking forward to this. You?
It's a toss-up for me. It really is. Because Junior Dos Santos has looked unstoppable since joining the UFC. That much is true. Gabe Gonzaga has been a mixed bag over the last couple of years. I think he looked very good against Shane Carwin until Carwin dropped him and basically broke his face. But
you think?
The one thing I think Gonzaga has going for him is Junior Dos Santos is probably feeling a little bit of pressure right about now because he's been so dominant that people are going to start expecting these performances from him. And as great as he is, and I think he's one of the top three, I think Junior Dos Santos deserves fighting for the title right now. I wouldn't put him in there with Gonzaga. I would put him in there with Brock Lesnar. That said, I think everybody's beatable. And Dos Santos hasn't shown any weakness so far. Gabe Gonzaga told me in Vegas at the THQ party that he was going to try and take him to the ground. And that's where he thinks he has the advantage against Junior Dos Santos. On the other hand, Junior Dos Santos trains with Nogueira, trains with the Black House. He should be good on the ground. He's a black belt in jiu-jitsu as well. So this might be a very, very interesting fight. I really do not know who's going to win this. But I'm going to pick...
Yeah.
I'm going to pick... I think Dos Santos is going to take it.
Okay. So we both have Dos Santos, but it would not surprise either one of us if Gonzaga won the fight.
I think it's pretty much a 50-50 fight with both of us leaning a little bit towards Dos Santos just based off of his last performances.
And Gonzaga mentioned that he wanted to take him to the ground. Be careful what you wish for.
Exactly.
You know, like,
would you stand with the guy? That's probably also not something I'd want to do.
Well, you know what? I don't want to stand in front of Gonzaga either.
That's true. He's a strong guy.
He is a strong guy. I think he could be broken mentally. I don't know. I just have a heart. I just keep thinking about the Couture fight and what he did to him, which was just absolutely incredible. But I would not want to fight Gabe Gonzaga. To me, he's just a monster. He's a guy you don't want to get in there with if you're trying to climb the ladder in the UFC. I would not want to get in there with him. But we're leaning towards Dos Santos, so let's stay with him. That's going to bring us to our main event. Our very favorite fighter, Brandon Vera, is going to be taking on Bones Jones, and I'm going to start off on this. I don't want to disrespect Brandon Vera. I'm going to be nice here because I think the guy has all the talent in the world, but enough is enough. This is the time. I think I said at the last fight, this is the time to put up or shut up. I know he beat Frank Mir at UFC 65, but that was a fat, unmotivated Frank. You know, other than that, he hasn't won a high-profile fight in the UFC. I mean, and this was a guy calling out Chuck Liddell at the time at 205. He was going to be the heavyweight champion. Anytime he has stepped up, he has lost. He lost to Tim Sylvia. where he broke his hand in that fight but did absolutely nothing. He lost to Werdum when you could say he stepped up. He lost quickly. He lost to Keith Jardine in that fight, and the Randy fight too, which was a close fight. But anytime he has stepped up, he's lost. Enough already with him. This is his chance. If he can beat Bones Jones, it would mean something special. In my book, he'd be somewhat back in the hunt or at least keep his job. And if he loses, and it's no disrespect, he can just go to Strikeforce with his wife. Because I don't know how many chances he's going to get. I know he's got wins with Reese Andy and guys he's supposed to beat. Enough is enough with him. What do you think?
Who are you leaning towards?
Well, now you have – here's the thing with Bones. This is another thing with Bones Jones. This guy is a beast. I mean, I was cage side and watched him just destroy Matt Hamill. The one thing I like with Bones that I really, really like with him is – and he mentioned this about a week ago. He said that, you know, he heard that Brandon's a very good kickboxer, Muay Thai. Good. Let's do it. I'm gonna call you out on it. Let's have a little Muay Thai fight. Okay? He did the same thing with Jake O'Brien. Jake O'Brien's a great wrestler, which he is, out of college. So what does he do? He takes Jake down and submits him. Stephen Bonner wants to be Kung Fu fighter. He embarrassed Stephen Bonner at his own game. Okay? And Matt Hamill, tremendous wrestler. We all know that. I've never seen anybody do what he did to Matt Hamill. And I was sitting right at cage for that. So now he wants to do this and get in there, and he's going to call out Brandon Vera, and he wants to do the Muay Thai, and he wants to kickbox. He beats him that way, and I think he can. God bless the guy. I'm leaning towards Bones in this fight. You?
You know, I think it's good that UFC keep giving Vera tough opponents, but I'm sensing he either starts winning or he's not going to be long for the promotion, pretty much. Same thing as you were saying. I've been going back and forth on this fight for weeks now because, number one, I don't think Brandon Vera is going to have the answer or any answer for the questions John Jones raises, particularly speed and energy. Yet, at the same time, a calm and tactical Brandon Vera may just be what is needed to ground John Jones and hand him his first real loss. If Vera is as timid as in the latter rounds of the Couture fight, he's going to be eaten alive by Bones Jones. If he manages to keep the star wrestler at bay with low kicks, like he showed against Mike Pat, this could be or end up being a very long night for John Jones. I hear what you're saying. I hear that John Jones gets into people's heads, gets into their styles, and beats them at what they're good at. I think it's a very distinct possibility he's going to beat Brandon Vera at his own game, but I also think Brandon Vera, if he gets his shit together, may be a very, very big and difficult challenge for John Jones. He may be. But it really depends on which Brandon Vera shows up.
I agree. I agree with everything you're saying there. The thing with him, though, Oliver, is he seems to freeze in the big fights.
Yeah.
Now, he can go on with these other guys and look spectacular with his leg kicks and his Muay Thai and his head kicks and everything that he does. And he looks like, my God, look at the potential. Look at the talent this guy has. He gets in there with somebody decent, freezes every time.
True. The big question to me is, does Brandon Vera have what it takes to survive in today's UFC? Is he somebody who's consistent enough that he should be on the main cards? Is he consistent enough to even be in the promotion? I think John Jones is probably the worst opponent they could have picked for Brandon Vera at this point, because John Jones, with his style, with his movement, with his totally unorthodox technique, he poses problems for people a lot more composed than Brandon Vera is. And I think, Mike, what you said is going to happen. He's going to freeze up eventually, and John Jones is going to catch him. However, if the Brandon Vera shows up who fought Frank Mir, and out of shape Frank Mir, but Frank Mir, who fought Krzysztof Soszynski and who fought Mike Pat, I think he has a chance against John Jones. I'm not going to write off Brandon Vera. I've written off Brandon Vera many times in the past. He's not as bad as I thought he was, but he really... Let me put this nicely. He really needs to go back to his roots. He really needs to stop complaining and take action. I've heard Brandon Vera complain about decisions too many times. I've heard him complain about bad stoppages. I've heard him complain about complaining. Enough is enough.
Yeah. Really. Yeah. And you know what? I used a horrible example. I keep mentioning Reese Sandy. What a horrible fight that was.
Oh, yeah.
That was a fight that he won, but he didn't. Again, he froze. I don't have anything bad to say. I've said enough about him. If he gets a win here, congratulations. Keep him around. Big win over a very, very good fighter. If he loses, and he loses by getting knocked out, it may be see you later for Brandon Vera.
The thing is, Mike, if he gets axed from the promotion, he had more than enough chances to prove himself. And it always seems like it takes one step forward and three steps backward. This may be the one step where he either takes the step, reestablishes himself. And let's be honest, the loss against Randy Couture was controversial. There were a lot of people who thought Brandon Vera should have won that fight. I think I am in that same camp. I think Brandon Vera had a very good argument for winning that fight. He just lost due to passivity.
Again. He didn't.
Exactly. You know. And he complained afterwards that he disagreed with the decision, but that he wasn't going to argue about it because it doesn't do anybody any good. Yet, all he did since then is complain in every interview how he thinks he should have won the Couture fight.
Well.
There's a point in time when people who just complain all day, people are going to get tired of listening to them complain. And I think Brandon Vera has more than worn out his welcome. I think he's a very talented guy. He's a very friendly guy. I like to talk to Brandon Vera. I think he's a cool guy. But he really, really needs to grow up.
He's a great guy. But you got to win. And especially when you're calling out and you're going to win two belts and you're going to do this and that, you got to do something eventually. Any other of the prelim fights you're looking forward to?
Actually, a couple, but I don't think we're going to see any of them because the show's going to run long, but it's not going to be running that long. For instance, I'm very much looking forward to Elliot Marshall fighting Vladimir Matyushenko, the janitor.
The janitor,
one of my all-time favorites. He's a very methodical fighter as well. He was very depressed when he couldn't fight back in December or early January at UFC 108. His fight pretty much fell through on short notice. But at least he got his money. So Elliot Marshall is anything but a can for him to be facing. I think Marshall's even the favorites in Vegas. He's actually favored against Matyushenko on the other cards. So this is going to be an interesting fight. I'm looking forward to Brendan Schaub and Chase Gormley. Schaub didn't look so hot against our boy, Big Country Roy Nelson. But he's also somebody who's got a lot of talent and who's going to have to prove now if he can swim with the big guys. Because he looked great in Ultimate Fighter, he did not look great against Roy Nelson. But then again, who does look great against Roy Nelson? Roy Nelson has this quality about him where he pretty much saps you of all your energy and potential.
And he has the greatest name to his gym, the Country Club. Which is absolutely tremendous. The home gym is the Country Club. You have to love that. We'll be in a couple of weeks. Actually, all these fights are coming up soon, so we're going to be previewing that coming up shortly, probably after your trip.
Absolutely.
To Jersey.
Absolutely. And the other fight I'm really looking forward to, and I hope we're going to see this one, is Eric Schaefer and Jason Brills. You know, Eric Schaefer, one of the guys from Duke Rufus's Milwaukee gym, he's one of the good guys. He's a very consistent guy. He's somebody who hasn't really realized his full potential yet, but he's somebody who may just have a very good 2010. All these guys from Duke Rufus's gym, they're very, very easygoing. They're very friendly. He's one of those guys who you really hope is going to do well. And Jason Brills, on the other hand, he's also a very, very good guy. Good with the press, good with the fans. So whoever wins this fight, it's probably not going to be on the next marquee, but whoever wins this fight is going to move up the rankings and probably going to be on a main card soon.
Yes, and let's talk James Toney. What did you think of the James Toney signing?
Funny, because I got to tell you something. Just 3 days before that, I heard that former boxing world champion Lennox Lewis was looking to fight Randy Couture. And I didn't really think much of it until the day after I heard that they got turned down by the commission for the fight. They put out a press release announcing James Toney signing. Now again, Boxers and their camps like to talk shit. But I do find it kind of conspicuous that a rumor about Lennox Lewis fighting surfaces, it gets shot down, and a day afterwards another boxer signed to a contract. It may be just me, but it sounds very coincidental.
Yeah, and not just any boxer. We're talking about the NABO and IBA heavyweight champion, a guy who's probably had 500 fights between his amateur and professional career, 41-year-old James Toney. Actually one of my all-time favorite fighters. Good guy. I totally enjoy – he cuts fantastic promos. So if anything, we're going to be entertained by him.
Oh, that's for sure. The question now to me is just, will UFC give him an easy opponent as a first opponent so he has a prayer of winning it? Or are they going to go for the big fight right away? And who is the big fight going to be? Because I was kind of expecting either Kimbo, since Kimbo shouldn't really be a problem getting commission approval for, or try to go with the big ones and try to get a Randy Couture fight signed, because both guys are at a comparable age. Both guys are legendary in their respective sports. And really, even if James Toney loses to Randy, or vice versa, it doesn't really do a lot of damage to either guy.
I agree with the Kimbo, because I think if he beats Kimbo, you know, it's because Kimbo was really never a mixed martial artist and just a big street guy. But the other guy I would throw in there would be Tito Ortiz. I think that Tito may be the only guy in the UFC that Dana would enjoy seeing him lose to say a James Toney. I would not give him Liddell or Couture. There's too much risk involved, and I'm not saying that Randy or Chuck wouldn't beat him, but I would not want to see James Toney get lucky and catch one of those two with a shot. I say take your chances with Tito and Kimbo, and then tell James Toney goodbye.
Well, what's the story with Tito? Isn't he injured? Or is he injured?
I have no idea. I know he posted he was in the hospital. He had the flu. He was talking about that on his Twitter the other day. And other than that, I don't know. There was a rumor about his shoulder, talking about Rich Franklin coming in to replace him, and which brings us to a fight that they're actually looking at, which is Rich Franklin and Randy Couture. And I know, listening to them, it's an interesting fight, to say the least. And I think they're looking to see what Randy's schedule is of when exactly. I think they're looking at June. What do you think about this fight?
This fight does nothing for me. Nothing at all. Because if Randy beats Rich, he's going to be right where he's now. If Randy loses to Rich, it's not like Rich is gonna gain a lot from that. So, to me, I like Rich Franklin. I enjoy watching him. I think he was one of the instrumental fighters in UFC's ascension. But it doesn't feel like Rich is still a main event caliber fighter right now. And probably neither is Randy, except for one or two marquee fights. So I'm not really sure what that fight is supposed to accomplish, to be honest. What do you think?
I will say this. Rich Franklin is the greatest company man in the UFC. Here's a guy who steps up. He fights Hendo, I think, at that catchweight at 195. Or Silva. He fought Hendo, I think, at 205. He fought Vanderlei. Now they're going to put him in with Randy. You know, I guess they're doing everything they can for Rich. He's not going to beat Anderson Silva. He most likely isn't going to be a champion again in the UFC. So you put him out there against top guys. It may not go well for him, but you know what? He's going to get some paydays out of it, and he's such a good, you know, a good employee with them. And this is a guy. See, I differ a little bit. This fight could be a little different, but this is a guy who can lose a fight and come back and main event the next show, because just for whatever reason, people really like him. But a loss here would not help the case.
See, he didn't look that hot against Vanderlei in Germany. He got knocked out by Vitor Belfort in a fight he probably shouldn't have taken. What if Randy manages to pound him out? That would be three bad showings by Franklin in a row. I know he's never going to be fired from UFC or anything, but is it really worth putting this in the main event? Let me rephrase that. If you put Couture and Franklin in the main event, don't be surprised to do your baseline and buys, because neither guy seems to be a big draw at this stage, except if it's against a guy who they have a storyline with. And that's pretty much what the exception that I have with this, or the exception that I take to this fight, because there are a lot of natural fights set up for Randy right now. No pun intended. There's a lot of guys you could put him in there with, and there would be a good story behind it. Rich Franklin is not one of them. Franklin's popular. Couture is popular. The last time Couture fought somebody who was popular like him, it turned out to be one of the worst buy rates of the year, Nogueira. So,
yeah.
Do people really want to see a guy like Franklin fight a guy like Couture? Does it, and what kind of a message does it send? Because it feels like a fight that isn't going to have any impact on what the quote-unquote ratings are. It doesn't really get one guy into title contention or move the other guy away from title contention. To me, it's a lose-lose fight. If neither guy looks spectacular, they're both going to get hurt. If one guy wins spectacularly, if it's Couture, he's going to be where he's right now. He's never going to beat Rich as dominantly as he beats Mark Coleman. And if Rich beats Randy, what purpose does it serve, really?
Now, you do realize that this fight will probably be awesome now. It'll probably be a fantastic fight between the two. You mentioned the Nogueira-Randy fight. It's too bad that nobody really saw it, because what a great fight that was.
It was my personal fight of the year by far.
Yeah, I mean, that was just – what a great fight.
I loved Clay and Diego, but to me, Randy and Nogueira just had so much drama.
That pretty much takes us out for this show. I am glad to have the chance to talk to you again and get back on the horse here, so to speak. We totally enjoyed it. I'm glad to be back with Dave and Brian, and there's a lot of action going on here in the next 10 days that we're going to be covering, previewing, reviewing, getting some more guests on the show. We want to thank Kim Couture for coming on, and she was very, very good, and we wish her luck in that fight on the 27th in Mexico, and we'll get her back on the line for sure. Oliver, it's been great talking to you. Glad to be back, and anybody, again, go to JoeKnuckles.com if you want to check out some cool-looking T-shirts. And we'll be talking soon, buddy.
Absolutely. Check with you after 1:11. See you, buddy.
Sounds good.
The Ultimate Fighting Championship presents UFC 111. The 2009 Fighter of the Year, George Rush St. Pierre, has beaten the best to become the best.
Total domination by George St. Pierre.
But in this game, there's always somebody better.
Oi, oi!
And the UK's number one welterweight, Dan Hardy, believes that he is that somebody.
This fight puts you in line for a shot at the best pound-for-pound fighter on the planet.
George Rush St. Pierre versus Dan the Outlaw Hardy for the welterweight title. Plus a second title fight with a combined 23 first-round finishes, the race between former champ Frank Mir and undefeated Shane Carwin for the interim heavyweight championship is on. Tap Out presents UFC 111, St. Pierre versus Hardy, live Saturday, March 27th from Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey. Only on pay-per-view. Visit UFC.com for details.
Tough Talk. 100% MMA.